Case of 97-1920, General Dynamics Land Systems Inc. versus Roger Tracy Tax Commission.
Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Paul Smith, representing Helen General Dynamics Land Systems. And I reserve 2 minutes of my time.
Watch your clock. I watch your time at the clock.
The issue in this case is whether the personal property of General Dynamics Land Systems located at the Lima Army Tank Plant is subject to state personal property taxation. We submit that the answer to that question is no for two basic reasons. First, that the Lima Army Tank Plant is and has been since World War II a federal enclave where there is federal jurisdiction, except in those places where there has been expressed consent by the federal government to exercise the state jurisdiction. And second, that there is no consent to state property taxation at the tank plant because the only statute that is even cited for providing such consent, Section 2667, is absolutely inapplicable here because it has nothing to do with the basis on which General Dynamics is using and occupying the plant. It's a lease statute that applies in other contexts and is not used in this instance. Let me start with the enclave issue, if I might, since it seems to be logical first. This seems to be common.
Can I stop you just for a moment on a procedural matter? If we decide in your favor on the appeal, we never get to the cross appeal, do we?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
There's a common ground among the parties that basically there's only two criteria that have to be met in order for the creation of a federal enclave. There has to be a state statute which authorizes it, and there has to be a notice that was filed with the governor by the federal government claiming exclusive jurisdiction. The Attorney General doesn't deny that the state statute, Section 159.04, qualifies as a statute that authorizes cession of property. So the only issue is whether these letters that were sent by the Secretary of War during World War II to the governors of Ohio qualify as notices for purposes of Section 255 in the federal statutes. And as I understand it, the only real argument against those letters qualifying is that they were insufficiently specific, in the sense that they referred only to all military property then being used and acquired for purposes of the federal government's war effort at the time.
If General Dynamics was building tanks only for Saudi Arabia here and not for the United States, assuming they could do that and they can military property, but assuming they clearly were currently building tanks for Saudi Arabia as well as for America, would that satisfy the purpose of the statute, do you think?
Well, Your Honor, if the federal enclave was created back in World War II, but in the 1990s we were doing that, General Dennis was doing that, I don't think there would be any basis on which you could say that conduct in some way eliminated the federal enclave that had been created 50 years earlier. Certainly it is a public purpose that the Saudi tank contract is something done by and through the federal government, and we are merely providing tanks as part of the foreign policy of this country to sell those tanks to the Saudi government. It's not just selling widgets to consumers up in Michigan or something like that. It's very much part and parcel of our work that's done for the federal government. In any event, either way, I think that our conduct, no matter what it is, would eliminate an area of federal exclusive jurisdiction once it's been created. It only can be eliminated by act of Congress or by sale of private property into private hands. And again, this notice that was sent to the governors explicitly claimed federal exclusive jurisdiction over all land then being used for military purposes in the U.S. Prior to World War II. And this notion that it had to be more specific is not based on any case law and is not based on any statutes. And it's perfectly clear that either the Congress or the state legislature could have required more specificity, could have required some particular form that this notice took, but no such requirement was ever enacted either at the state or federal level. So we have these letters which were sent 50 years ago, apparently in compliance with whatever applicable requirements there were, and now 50 years later they're being said, it's being claimed that they were insufficient as a matter of law to create exclusive federal jurisdiction. And we think there's no basis for requirement, either the statute or the case law.
Is this a common problem around the country? Obviously, you travel to various places to argue these kinds of cases. You had argued any other place?
You know, Your Honor, I'm not really a specialist in this area. We did have an issue with double dynamics up in Michigan. The other tank went up there that's no longer operative. And the court eventually recognized the need for federal exclusivization of the taxes could be levied. The general, from what you can tell from the case law, there hasn't been a problem with these general notices. They were, in fact, sent to all kinds of states around the country. You see that reflected in the case law. And nobody else, as far as we know, has really ever contested the notion that these letters were sufficient as a matter of law.
So the closest one was the Michigan case, and Michigan came down on the side of the federal government.
Right. Federal district court there ruled that the general dynamics could...
Probably wanted another tank plant or something.
the only issue then is really whether the Section 2667 gives consent. And that statute is a statute that has to do with real estate leasing for land not needed for public use. It is not the basis on which General Dynamics occupies the tank plant. It occupies the tank plant under contractual arrangements that have an entirely different statutory and regulatory basis. The federal acquisition regulations provide for government-owned, contractor-operated facilities of this kind, and those regulations expressly state that they have no application to lease property under 2667. And so you have two entirely different statutory and regulatory schemes at the federal level that are used for different purposes. And when you're talking about government contractors that be making weapons for the government, they don't use this 2667 lease. They use federal acquisition regulations that the contracts are provided for under those regulations, and therefore there never is any consent to state taxation. After all, what we're talking about here, once we understand that it is an area of federal exclusive jurisdiction, is whether or not there has been voluntary consent by the federal government to an exercise of state jurisdiction. The only way that the consent can exist is if somebody with authority in the federal government says, all right, we're going to revoke Section 2667, do a lease under that provision, and therefore, by that action, provide consent to state taxation of property on the premises. And there's no indication whatever here that anybody ever did that. Indeed, they did a very different thing. They did a government-owned, contractor-operated contractual arrangement by which we as the government of General Dynamics simply comes in and provides a service to the government, is paid to maintain an operating plan, and then is paid for the tanks that are produced. It's not a lessee, it's not treated as a lessee under any federal provisions, and indeed the regulations that authorize this arrangement say it has no application to these. So there's never been any basis for suggesting that anybody consented to this kind of taxation. Now, they cite this case, the Attorney General cites the Keegan case, as a case where this kind of a government-owned, contractor-operated arrangement was treated as if it had the appearance of a lease, but it's important to understand that that case had a very different legal issue. It had to do not with a federal enclave at all. It had to do with property that was in state jurisdiction. And the claim was that taxing the contractor's leasehold interest was effectively taxed on federal property indirectly in violation of the implied immunity provision of the Culver's Maryland case. And the court held there that in that situation, the constitutional power of the state extended to taxing the contractor's kind of quasi-lease interest. But here we're talking about a federal enclave, so here you have to find consent by the federal government. It's not a question of really constitutional power of the states. Did they not, at the federal level, give consent to taxation? And the only statute they cited simply has nothing to do with the basis on which General Dynamics operates the plan. So the Muskegon case and this whole notion that we can look at whether it looks like a lease simply is a misplaced set of arguments. The only other thing we have then is a whole lot of discussion of the course of conduct over a period of 2 to 3 or 4 or 5, maybe more years, where there was some confusion at the plant about which particular parts of the property were the area of exclusive jurisdiction. And this occurred many, many years after the area of exclusive jurisdiction was created. And it's not altogether clear to me exactly what the relevance of that's supposed to be, whether that somehow negated the exclusive jurisdiction or in some way waived it. It's clear, I think, that General Dynamics can't waive the government's exclusive property by some private party's conduct could in any way affect that. And to the extent that it's an issue of sort of course of conduct, it came 50 years after the fact. And even then, people, it wasn't that people didn't know there was an area exclusive to federal jurisdiction. The police officer from Shawnee Township testified they knew there was such an area. It was just, they had been given misinformation, apparently from General Dynamics, about which part of the property was the part that was acquired before the notice of 1943, therefore was exclusive to federal, and which part was acquired after in 1951, and therefore wasn't exclusive to federal. They had to switch somehow. But that kind of mistake about which property was which can't possibly somehow transmogrify and eliminate what happened in 1943 and put this piece of property, the main tank plant part of the property, back in state jurisdiction, if so factor sort of not pro tunc 50 years later.
And also, the commissioner's assessments are great.
Yes, sir.
What happened 50 years before that?
There's no information on the, in the record about whether the tax was paid. I don't have the information because I haven't been able to ascertain it.
So
what is clear is
your client may have been paying the tax in the years before.
What's clear is that they had very little property there. Because what happened in 88, 89 is that under the revised arrangement with the federal government, General Dynamics started buying some of the big machinery, the robot motors. So suddenly the amount of money at stake went from, for example, 88, 25,000 to 125,000 to nearly 200,000 in 1990. So suddenly the issue was on radar screens. It's not clear to me that
200,000 in terms of tax.
In terms of tax.
And what's been going on since 90?
Well, the next question, Your Honor, I don't know the answer. We didn't pay the tax in 1990. We brought the terms under protest. I'm assuming we continued that process after 1990 and then just control for all of those years. But we have, the only times it was paid, we received a refund, is 88 and 89. And so, you know, the period of time before that, apparently, because of this,
And from that point on, you moved in machinery, which is property of your client, which whenever this tank production arrangement comes to an end, your client can remove or
if
somebody else became the operator themselves, another operator.
Mr. Smith?
I was impressed.
Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I think a fact of overarching significance in this case is that, in fact, once General Dynamics did start acquiring its own personal property for use on this land, it did, in fact, as a matter of course, under its own assumptions and understandings, pay personal property tax on that property. We hear today that for 50 years this land was understood to be an enclave. Obviously it was not understood to be an enclave at the time that General Dynamics had property that would be taxable located on this particular land.
Well, what legal significance is that? I mean,
it was cheaper to pay the tax than to fight it. Maybe there are. That's all. Maybe you ought to be careful. They would be asking for a refund.
It's true. Obligations and pays tax they don't owe. Are they forever barred from waking up and realizing they don't owe?
Justice Piper, it's absolutely correct that jurisdiction cannot be waived. The point simply about both this and the course of conduct with the Shawnee Township Police is that the only sense that this was an enclave was contained in internal memoranda in Army 5. The record shows all the memoranda were internal. It was not understood for 50 years to be an enclave, and so it has a certain evidentiary value. It doesn't have legal significance in some
sense. So your sense would be when General Dynamics negotiated their deal with the federal government, they assumed they were going to have to pay tax on that later. Discovered they might have a little sidebar windfall.
Absolutely. In 1990, their internal memoranda apparently came to people's attention, and they decided that it was time to avoid those taxes. And by the way, tanks are built into the production contracts, they're built into fixed price contracts, so they must have assumed as well, since they paid the tax, they must have been building them into a price per tank.
Specific dollar amounts or just any taxes that they were required to pay?
The personal property tax is done for government contract work under the federal regulation of building fixed price contracts.
So the contract says the personal property taxes is required to pay.
Right. They accept that they pay them and we assume that they fill them into the price. With respect to the letters themselves, they're located, of course, the letters that are relied upon by General Dynamics at pages 598 and 599 of the supplement. I think it's important to take a close look at these letters because there was some loose talk about them earlier. Specifically, notice is hereby given to state the letters that the United States accepts exclusive jurisdiction over all lands acquired by it for military purposes, acquired for military purposes, is what the letter says, not used subsequently for military purposes, acquired for military purposes. Title to which is heretofore vested in the United States and over which exclusive jurisdiction has not heretofore been obtained. That is the language that's used both in the April 17, 1943 letter upon which General Dynamics relies. And if that's not enough, General Dynamics cites another letter from December of 1944, same language. And what citing these two letters together shows is not a belt and suspenders in terms of getting conflict status. It shows a hopeless and insuperable ambiguity because if, in fact, the first letter is enough to create enclave jurisdiction, then the second letter, by its terms, wouldn't apply because the previous letter would have already accepted jurisdiction into this unspecified land. But if, in fact, the second letter does apply, it suffers from the same ambiguity as the first letter suffers from. And so the letters piling them up doesn't help us. It just shows that there's a hopeless ambiguity, and that was precisely the ambiguity that Congress sought to eliminate in 1940 when it enacted Section 255 of Title 40. That section, as the United States Supreme Court interpreted in the Adams case, Act, provided for a definite method of acceptance so that all persons could know what the jurisdictional status of land was. That was not accomplished by these letters. And the record is replete with various letters, for example, the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where the federal government found it important and necessary to specify the land. There's one in the record where Secretary of War Stinson at the time sends a 12-page letter specifying properties and specifying where they can be found in the county records.
Well, how do we class these letters as mere surplusage?
They were
pen pals, right, now, back and forth, right?
The suggestion was made by an employee of the federal government who testified to General Dynamics, Gloves to Baldus, that during the war, people weren't necessarily focusing on issues of local taxation. They had other things to attend to. And so Mr. Stinson, the Secretary of War, sent out a few of these letters, which were just general. He didn't nail it down. Our point simply is jurisdiction is jurisdiction. Either it was properly accepted under Congress's statute or it wasn't. And it seems plain to us that it was not. With respect to the Michigan case,
Before you go to Michigan case, wasn't there an Ohio letter? Not just Secretary Simpson's letter. Wasn't there an Ohio letter that says we, in effect, cede jurisdiction?
Well, the jurisdiction is ceded by Ohio under the section that it cited.
Well, what was that letter all about? That was just, they just sent that letter because they...
I'm not sure which letter you're referring to.
The General Assembly adopted legislation, didn't it? Wasn't that right?
I think they sent a letter.
Sure. Exclusive jurisdiction where the federal government that accepts it. The question here is whether the federal government has validly accepted it under Congress's statute.
Well, isn't there also a corollary to that, that we have to reserve the right to tax? And did we do that?
No, we did not reserve the right to tax. Under the surplus trading case, the language of Ohio's statute does not reserve the right to tax. Okay? So our contention is these letters from the Secretary of War did not comply with Congress's directives and therefore did not accept jurisdiction on behalf of the United States, so they're not in place. And the record in the case, voluminous as it is, bears that out. There's no indication that anybody really treated this as an enclave, except perhaps in a couple of internal memoranda in the Army's file. And in fact, it wasn't only General Dynamics that used the mistaken map. The record shows that the Defense Logistics Agency, when there was a strike going on, the General Dynamics plant, used this erroneous map showing that only certain vacant lands were under special jurisdiction. For some reason, for a number of years, this was regarded as not being a federal jurisdiction. We think it's consistent with our theory that no exclusive jurisdiction is ever accepted for a piece of property. The Michigan case was basically a tax case. It was not a federal court case. It was sort of a common pleas court level case. Basically, it involved a situation where land had been condemned and the condemnation proceeding revealed military purposes. That's not at all similar to this case, where we have land that's purchased and entitled to the United States of America, not even to the Department of War. If you look at the land, what does it have? Ultimately, it has an industrial plant on it. Well, looking at a land with an industrial plant doesn't necessarily make you think that this is a military base. And by the way, in each of the cases, if you look closely at each of the cases that have involved these kinds of general blank acceptance letters, in each case, land at issue is a military base. That is uniformed people driving around, MPs providing police protection, the federal government stepping up to its responsibility to actually provide police and fire services that are otherwise provided.
Did you ever try to get in that tank plant without an escort? Did you ever try to get in this tank plant without an escort? There's a guard there.
I've never been up to
one. Well, I have. Does the federal government ever come in on one side or the other of these cases, and did it here?
There was a brief filed, not when it should have been, at the first brief, perfect cross appeal situation here. They filed a third brief stage, and in fact, quite out of rule, they expressed support for General Dynamics' position on the appeal issue, which they should have done really in the first brief. So they have come out and expressed.
So the federal government thinks this is a federal enclave.
Well, I think that our supplemental authority addresses both that and it addresses this issue of federal regulation towards this claim that the authority of Section 2667 is necessary for the type of arrangement that is for contractors using their own property.
I didn't go read your Watt case versus Alaska. I just didn't, but I didn't understand your additional authority and how that applies.
Well, that's why I like to explain it.
Good. Attention to contemporaneous construction is particularly appropriate in these cases because the department first proposed the amendment. And I didn't see any about that things in the brief. Go ahead.
Your Honor, that case, as this case, involved a federal agency. In that case, it was the Department of the Interior. Here, the Department of War and Navy back in 1947. The letter was written to Congress. We need this legislation for X, Y, and Z purposes. Then, after the legislation is enacted, the Department of the Interior takes a completely different and conflicting position on what the statute means. Here, in 1947, there was testimony by W. John Kenney, who was the principal witness, he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy, about what the Military Leasing Act was needed for. And he stated in his testimony that the primary reason is for a so-called facility standby program. The United States government had acquired a lot of property in the course of the Second World War, and they wanted to put some of it sort of on mothball for military purposes, but be able to recover it quickly if an emergency arose, a shooting war, as Secretary Kenney termed it. But then he said, the bill has the important ancillary purpose in that it will furnish the means whereby real or personal property of the government under the control of War or Navy departments may be made available to contractors to aid them in the production of munitions, vessels, or other supplies for the departments. That's exactly the use at LATP. The land is made available to General Dynamics as a contractor for use by them in their profit-making enterprise of making munitions for the federal government. So the military itself said, Congress, we need this bill, this Military Leasing Act, which is now Section 2667. We need it in order to do precisely this thing that's done out of LATP. Subsequent pronouncements in the form of regulations or untimely briefs of this court simply cannot overcome the Supreme Court said in the Watt case, we're not going to accord any deference to these later representations that simply contradict what was told to Congress when it enacted the statute. That's the significance of our supplemental authority.
We need to get you, I think, off the federal enclave issue, because I'd like to. Let's assume that this is a federal enclave. How has Ohio reserved the right to tax the personal property here under a lease?
Our argument, Mr. Chief Justice, is not based on a reservation of the right to tax. That right was ceded, but Congress has consented to Section 2667E.
You think EE is your...
And the proof of that is the offer case. That's not really... The other side's not disputed that if 2667 apply at all, that it would in fact make the personal property taxable. They just say 2667 somehow isn't necessary authority for what the Army is doing here. The Offutt case established, that case involved a military base. It involved a private contractor coming in and building and operating housing for military personnel on the military base. And in that situation, there was a consent to tax, and the lessee's interest was construed to cover everything, right down to items of furniture and personal property, which were owned by the private contractor.
Isn't counsel then a legitimate distinction of the Offutt case to say that it dealt primarily with improvements to real estate? Is that case not distinguishable from this one on that basis?
It involves some improvements to real estate, but if you look at the very end of the opinion, Justice Cook, there was a question raised about personal property items, furniture sticks out in my mind, or a couple of other items.
It's furniture.
Which were also made taxable as part of the lessee's interest. And so the lessee's interest language clearly covers personal property, such as the robot welders that are involved in this case. Thank you very much, Mr. Chief.
Next, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Smith, you've saved about 3 minutes of your time.
Just a couple of quick points, Your Honor. Of course, I think it should be clear that the federal government is ultimately the real party of interest here. They will be paying these taxes through higher prices for the tanks. Indeed, they direct us as their contractors who bring this lawsuit to defend against these taxes. And by the way, I'm informed that we have protested all the taxes in 1990. Just so it's clear, that's where the whole party interest stands. They certainly have supported this in this case, and it's so indicated in their amicus brief. As to the sufficiency of the letter that was sent by Secretary Stimson back in 1943, I don't understand what was going on at that point. There was property being acquired all over the country for training bases, for lots of other military purposes, and they sent these letters periodically to all the governors where there was anything going on in order to preserve their rights under the federal statute that had been passed in 1940. First time required that there be written notices to the governor before you can have exclusive federal jurisdiction. That was the common course of conduct during the war. More recently, of course, they've been more fastidious about identifying property. There's nobody that's ever suggested in this case that those letters didn't have the effect of getting exclusive federal jurisdiction on the property. And certainly the course of conduct happened in the 80s when there was some confusion about which land it was that had the exclusive general jurisdiction doesn't negate what those letters did. And indeed, there was never a suggestion in the 80s that there was an absence of federal jurisdiction, which is a question of which land it was.
Counsel, what about 2667?
Well, as to 2667, the most that they've come up with is a sentence from legislative history in 1947 that says it could have been used to for government contractors to come in and make weaponry for the federal government. They could have leased it to General Adams, at least that's what that one sentence says. The fact is, for the last 50 years, it has never been used in that way. It is used for property that is not needed. When they want to land property, they want to have to just lease out so somebody can put grazing on it or make widgets to sell to the public. They lease it under 2667. If it's going to be a government contractor making weaponry for the government, they use the acquisition regulations, which have the force of law, and say these contracts are not leases. They're not governed by 2667. It's an entirely separate legal regime, and that's in fact how the government has acted for the last 50 years. And there's no indication, therefore, that there has been a consent to taxation because they have not invoked or relied on the statute that contains the purported consent. They could have, perhaps, that's the most of the legislative history shows, is that they might have used the
General Dynamics is not leasing anything.
General Dynamics is not a lessee, it's a licensee. It's a licensee. Has permission to come in and, as a contractor, perform services for the federal government on the federal government's property. It's the federal government's tax free and brings up its property in there to help perform those services. But there is no lease, and there's nothing in the federal regulatory structure that would suggest that you could construe it that way. Neither would be inconsistent with regulations which have the force of law. It's not really a contemporaneous or less contemporaneous construction. You have a regulation that's been in effect for a long time that says it's not a lease.
Is there any purchase option in the federal government in the property in question?
Where General Dynamics would have the right of first refusal to the property and anything about it?
The other way around. Your property that you brought on this, under this enclave, does the federal government have the option to purchase that property?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. I wouldn't be at all surprised if you'd be willing to sell it to them if the contractors can't. Because you would probably be lumber advantageous for us to leave it there, get the money for it, and try to put it somewhere else.
But you don't know if there's a formal arrangement.
No, I can find out the answer and supply that to the court if you'd be lumber. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion. Take a brief recess.
All rise.